Thomas Merton is probably, arguably, the greatest religious Catholic figure of the 20th century. And for various reasons, actually. He died in 1968, so one could be surprised at such a claim. But if you actually look at his enormous influence in the area of the arts, in the area of interreligious dialogue, in the area of ecumenicity, and a number of the social issues, from race relations to peace, you'll find that Merton pretty well touches base with all of them. His was a shimmering intellect, and I think he was the preeminent public intellectual of his day. In the Catholic Church.
Why do you say that, though?
Because I think he was rather fearless in addressing issues and challenges that we find in society at large. He didn't have a citadel mind or sensibility. He didn't retreat from anything. He studied at the best secular universities like Columbia, and he was at Cambridge, Clare College, Cambridge. He went to the Lycée Ingres in France. He published in the really respectable secular journals. He had a good reputation among people who were outside the church. And this gave him a credibility and gave him a position whereby he could address a number of issues without being seen as either a marginal figure or sectarian.
But before he arrived into his time within the monastery and the monastic life, he was living a secular life. Have I got that correct?
He was, and in some respects he was living an Augustinian pre-conversion life. He had several girlfriends. There are rumors that have been mooted for years, in part generated by him, that he impregnated a young woman, and both of them perished during the Blitzkrieg. We have some difficulty authenticating all of this. He had a rather rich imagination. And people who undergo a radical conversion usually look at their past as an entirely negative experience. And so Merton's early life was a life that was characterized by, in many ways, exploration. He dallied with social democratic and even communist sympathies. He became deeply involved in radical politics in New York. He had, as I said, many girlfriends. He lived the life of a typical 1930s graduate student, and then he converted, and then within a few years after that, he took himself off in 1941 to become a monk in the order of the Cistercians of the Strict Observance.
One of the passages I've read, written by him, by Thomas Merton himself, is that he was talking about the road up, on the road from the outside road, on the way up to the monastery itself.
Yes.
Do you want to expand on that?
Well, Merton always used a journey motif when he talked about his travels. And even though he was vowed to stability, if you like, staying in a monastery, he actually roamed the world, both intellectually and eventually in 1968, in fact, going to Sri Lanka, going to India, going to all throughout the west coast of the United States, Oregon, San Francisco, he got to Arizona. He was making up for lost time. And, of course, he died from accidental electrocution in Bangkok in 1968, and at the age of 53. It's absolutely stunning.
I hadn't realized, actually, that he died in Bangkok. I thought he died in America in a hospital.
No, he died. He died in... he was in actually quite good health, probably the best health he had been in for a long time. And the wire on the large stand-up fan was shorted, and he took an enormous voltage. When he got out of the shower, the soles of his feet were wet, and it was a terrazzo floor, and the shock from it knocked him over. The fan fell on him and burned into him. He wasn't discovered for some time, by which time he was dead. And it's interesting to note that when one of the monks came in to remove the fan, he too was electrocuted, although not fatally, because the charge was so powerful and it had still been plugged in.
You've mentioned that he was somewhat of a dreamer, if I've...
A visionary. In fact, that's the title of the book I've just written. It will be published in May of this year, and it's called Faithful Visionary, because I want to look at the ways in which Merton could envision new ways of being. Some of the things that we see now in the Roman Catholic Church, for instance, particularly in the papacy of Francis, echo some of the many things he was saying to Pope John XXIII, with whom he corresponded from about 1958-59, shortly up to before he died in 1963. In fact, John XXIII was so fond of Merton, he gave him his stole that he had been vested in at the time of his consecration as Pope.
Would it be unfair to say that there was a Walter Mitty factor there, to be able to be a visionary, that he needed to have that Walter Mitty factor?
Well, I suppose to some degree he might have. He certainly was a satirist, and he had a delicious sense of humor. And I think it was one of the reasons why many people in the secular world, if you want to use that phrase, were drawn to him. Because they found in his language and his approach a certain robustness of imagination, a ribaldry. He could be quite irreverent. He was very fond of beer and would often have a Budweiser at a retreat. But some of the major thinkers in the Catholic Church at the time, including people like Jacques Maritain. So Merton was a very social animal. And for literally half of his life, he lived it as a monk. And I think he found that very bracing in some respects. But he also needed it, because the development of a very clear vision requires contemplative time. And, of course, it's one of the things he's known for is his work in contemplation. What you have is you have a divided personality in the sense that his instincts and abilities drive him in one direction, but his commitment to an integrated wholeness drive him in another direction. So there's a kind of creative tension. But that's not uncommon with major thinkers.
What legacy do you feel that Merton has left us within the church, specifically, say, to the lay Catholic who's just trying to deepen their faith?
I think a couple of things. The most important is he's underscored the reality and the need for deep prayer in our lives. Contemplative time, interiority, stillness. A number of the things that have become, to some degree, fashionable were really being explored by him quite seriously in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. The other thing is his openness to serious dialogue with faith traditions outside the Catholic Church. I know that Suzuki, the great Zen Buddhist, once commented that nobody in the West understood Buddhism better than Merton. And that was echoed by Amaya Chakravarti, the great Hindu scholar, on the occasion of Merton's death, said there was no one in the West who understood Hinduism better than him. Now, these are extraordinary plaudits from distinguished religious leaders in their own right. He never ceased to be anything other than Catholic. He was deeply rooted in his Catholicism, but he understood that the world of pluralism, the world that we live in, required an openness and courage in dialogue that sometimes, you know, we don't give strong evidence of. But I would think under the pontificate of Francis, we're recovering a kind of Mertonian energy.
So you feel then the legacy would be visible within the current papacy?
I think to some degree. I haven't seen yet any indication that Jorge Bergoglio has read Merton. But I did talk to Pope Francis's very close friend, Rabbi Skorka, Abraham Skorka, because we gave him an honorary degree at Sacred Heart in Connecticut. And I had some time with him. And he asked me at one point, he said, "Michael, what are you writing now?" And I said, "Well, I'm writing a book on Thomas Merton, thinking what he might or might not know him." And he stopped and he looked at me and he said, "Such a deep thinker, you know, such an important man." And then he talked about Abraham Joshua Heschel, one of the great giants of Jewish thought and mysticism in the 20th century, who was a friend of Merton's. So almost at every point you have connections or convergences with other faith traditions. They found in Merton a willing listener, and he was open to going deeper into his own tradition. That's an important legacy.
So truly Catholic in the truest sense of that word.
Absolutely. Uppercase C and lowercase C.